Dr. Ryan McKay, and we are at the Crown in Egham, and we're both drinking Stellas. We're here to celebrate a paper that he's just published. It's called Why Do Delusion-Prone Individuals Jump to Conclusions? An Investigation Using a Non-Serial Data Gathering Paradigm, that was recently published in Clinical Psychological Science. Congratulations on your publication. Cheers.
Thank you, Laura. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Will you first describe what a delusion is?
With pleasure. So a delusion is an unjustified belief, often with bizarre content that features as a symptom of a number of different psychiatric and neurological conditions. Psychiatric conditions like schizophrenia, for instance, neurological conditions like Huntington's disease, Parkinson's, traumatic brain injury and whatnot. Just to give an example, so some of the more exotic examples, there are people who believe that their loved ones have been replaced by imposters. That's a delusion called Capra delusion.
Right.
There are people who believe that they're dead. That's a delusion called Cotard delusion. And the more kind of mundane garden variety delusions are delusions like paranoid delusions, where people think that the CIA is tapping their phones, or that maybe a neighbor's pumping poison gas into the house or something like that.
In your paper, you didn't use participants who had a clinical disorder.
That's right. We just use healthy participants, and it's not so easy to source patients with delusions.
Right.
But there are also a whole bunch of logistical difficulties with using patients with delusions, because different patients might have different medication regimes.
Oh.
There might have been varying in how long they've had the condition, for instance, age of onset of the condition. So there's a whole bunch of different confounds that can arise when you actually use clinical patients. But there is a fairly recent tradition of studying from the healthy population and studying proneness to delusions, which is something you can measure with a fairly basic kind of questionnaire.
Okay.
But that way you can test models of delusion formation using healthy participants that
right.
vary in a proneness to delusions.
What was your research question here?
Right. So there's a pretty large literature on the cognitive underpinnings of delusions, trying to understand how it is that someone could form a belief with a, you know, bizarre content like this. And one of the most influential effects or claims in this literature is it's known as the jumping to conclusions bias. And the basic idea is that patients with delusions will gather less evidence or insufficient evidence before forming beliefs and making decisions. Just to give you a simple example, like maybe if you're walking along a corridor and someone walks behind you and jangles the keys in their pocket, you notice them, you or I might think, whatever, someone walking behind me. But if you're prone to leap to certain conclusions, then you might think, hey, it's someone following me. Why are they following me? Maybe there's some shady organisation after me. You might leap to certain conclusions on the basis of insufficient evidence, and you might not test those different conclusions against considerations of general plausibility in the same way that you or I might. You might be inclined to just leap to conclusions on the basis of limited evidence. So that's a very influential claim in the literature. There are a lot of studies that replicate that basic finding that patients with delusions and healthy people prone to delusions tend to gather less information before making decisions, but it's not really clear why that is. So the main aim of this paper was to try and tease apart a couple of different possible explanations for why it is that people who are prone to delusions gather less information when forming beliefs.
And you created a new paradigm, is that true?
Well, that's sort of true. We adapted a common paradigm. So there's a very commonly used task, which is called the beads task. It's a very simple task. Imagine that there are two different jars, and each jar is filled with coloured beads. One of the jars has mostly red beads and some yellow beads in it as well, and the other jar has mostly yellow beads but some red beads. And let's say you know what the proportions are, so you know that there are 85 red and 15 yellow in the first jar, 85 yellow and 15 red in the second jar. Now, if I were to show you those two jars of beads and then hide them underneath the table, I'll select one of the jars at random and I'll start drawing a sequence of beads from that jar. And your task as the participant is to look at the sequence of beads that I'm drawing and then to tell me when you're ready to decide which of the two jars I'm drawing from, the mostly red jar or the mostly yellow jar. So you're seeing some evidence
yeah.
and then you're making a decision about the state of the world, and where that relevant state of the world is, which of the two jars I'm drawing from. Now, the classic experiment that set in motion the whole jumping to conclusions cottage industry, if you like, was done in the late 80s. Researchers got patients with delusions, and they also had some healthy people and some psychiatric control participants perform this task. And what they found was that the patients with delusions were ready to decide which jar the drawers were coming from much more quickly. Almost half of the patients with delusions decided on just the very first bead.
Wow.
So there's two jars under the table. A red bead comes out. Half of the patients with delusions are like, right, I'm ready. Okay, it's the mostly red jar.
Wow.
Whereas the non-deluded individuals wanted to see more evidence.
So that's the beads task. And how did you then adapt it?
This is where I need to tell you what two of the different theories are. So the fact is that people with delusions decide more quickly on the beads task. The question is, why is that? What's going on cognitively? One possibility is that people with delusions place more weight than they should on the evidence that's in front of them. They're kind of excessively gullible, if you like. You present them with a bit of evidence, they're immediately inclined to trust that evidence and to disregard background considerations about prior plausibility, for instance.
Okay.
So they trust the evidence of their senses more, perhaps. That's one way of putting it. So if you show them a red bead, they immediately think red jar, and they don't weigh up what the prior probability of the red, mostly red jar and the mostly yellow jar was. They just form beliefs that match the evidence in front of them. That's one possibility.
Okay.
Another possibility is that people who are prone to delusions or who have delusions, they just find data gathering more kind of effortful, more onerous, more taxing than healthy people or non-delusion prone people. So you imagine you're a person with delusions, you've probably got all sorts of mental health issues and perhaps some other social issues as well. You're in a study, you might just want to get out of there as soon as you can.
Right.
You might not be as motivated as the average university student, for instance, or healthy participant to try and impress the experimenter with getting the right answer. You might just think, I want to get out of here, so, oh, okay, fine. You're presented with a task where you can decide how you're like, well, okay.
I'm done. Yeah.
So you might be less inclined to gather more data just because there's a sort of higher subjective cost of gathering data, if you like.
Right.
What we tried to do in our study was to set up the task in such a way that we could try and tease apart those explanations. And part of that involves incentivizing the task. And so what I mean by that is that the task, as I just explained it to you, doesn't have any explicit, say, monetary incentives. I just said, tell me when you're ready to decide which of the two jars it is. I didn't say, look, I'm going to buy you a new car if you get the right answer, or, you know, there wasn't really anything at stake beyond you wanting to get the right answer. But at the same time, there wasn't any cost of gathering more information. Now, the whole notion of jumping to conclusions, that terminology suggests that you've made a premature decision, that you've decided before you should have. But in fact, if there are no explicit incentives in the task, then the notion of a premature decision doesn't actually make any sense. There's no incentive, so what would it mean? If I choose 100 beads and you choose 2 beads, who's to say that you chose...
I'm smarter.
Yeah.
I got out of it.
Exactly. Who's to say that you chose, that you jumped to conclusions and I didn't?
Right.
That's just a relative finding. But if you incentivize the task, so if you say, look, I'm going to give you £5 if you get the right jar, and I'm going to charge you 20 pence for every bead you see, then that creates an actual decision problem that has a formal solution to it. You can calculate what the rationally optimal point at where rationally optimal is defined as the point which would earn you the most money in the task.
Right.
So that's part of it, incentives. Wow. But even if you incentivize the task in that way, there's still a problem, because it still could be that patients with delusions, even given those incentives, just find data gathering more costly. The key innovation with this study was that instead of, and this might not sound terribly exciting, but in the context of this literature, it is an innovation, is that the standard task is a serial task, and that means you see a sequence of beads. I'll pull out bead one. Do you want to decide or not?
Yeah.
Okay, you want ready for another bead? Then another bead comes out. So you see a sequence of beads. So in that task, it is true that if you decide after the first bead, you get out of here faster than someone who went on to, the 20th bead. What we did was we showed people the setup, and then we said, how many beads do you want up front? And so you could say, I want 2 beads, and I might say, I want to see 20 beads. And then we simply show people the sample of either 2 beads or 20 beads.
That's a good idea.
So the idea there is that you sampling more information is not more effortful or more time-consuming than sampling less information.
Excellent.
So the idea was that if you still observe this relationship between proneness to delusions and data gathering, then it can't be attributed to the subjective cost of gathering information being higher. What we found is that people who are prone to delusions still gathered fewer pieces of information in this paradigm, and what we argue is that because the paradigm was set up such that more information doesn't equate to more time or more cost, then that can't be what's going on behind the jumping conclusions bias.
What is going on then?
My favourite explanation is that patients with delusions, they kind of misvalue evidence. They think that a given piece of evidence is more kind of diagnostic about the state of the world than it actually is. So in a way, they're more gullible than they should be. This tendency to jump to conclusions is... it's fairly widely replicated, but of course you need to look to meta-analyses. So there have been a series of meta-analyses in the last couple of years, and it seems that...
You have one.
I have one, yeah. What we found was that there is an overarching effect that patients prone to delusions tend to jump to conclusions. Not a large effect, but it is...
There's something
going on. People who are prone to delusions do seem to gather less information than other people. So there's something going on there, and the question is why.
Those who are more delusion-prone than others, and their students that you tested, are they worse at critical thinking than their peers?
That's a nice question. I have another paper where we have a large sample of people, like something like 500 or 600, and we got them to do the Beads task, and we found there that analytic cognitive style is quite a strong predictor of performance on this task. So the more analytic you are, the more evidence you need.
Oh.
And maybe to try and kind of fold that into the explanation that I've been favouring here, if you're really intuitive, which is kind of the opposite, you know, in this kind of Kahneman type 1, type 2 kind of sense, if you're more intuitive, trust your gut, then you see this red bead, you know, intuitively there's a kind of a match between a red bead and a red jar. That's what you've got in front of you. Your intuition says red bead, red jar. Whereas being more analytical requires you to kind of suspend your immediate judgment and to bring online other sources of evidence.
Congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure interviewing you.
Pleasure to be here.